après l'autre dimanche sous même programme il est le temps sur WGXC90.7 FM écran New York.
Okay, here we go. Hi, everybody. This is Brad with the United Way of Columbia and Greene Counties. You are listening to WGXC ACRA, Columbia and Greene Counties, 90.7 on the dial.
New York's Museum of Firefighting hosts a snowball that they promise will be copyright-free, with the Snow Sisters Elsa and Anna singing songs and dancing, photographing, and more. It's a morning of holiday fun for the kids, December 10th at New York's Museum of Firefighting in Hudson. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Alexander Adam of Athens, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
Take your Wellingtons off, children, and Mammy will tell you a pleasant story.
Good evening. This is Kevin Factor here, and I'm in the studio today with Professor Benjamin Hale. And at home, under quarantine, we have my dear co-pilot, my dear other co-pilot, Eric Fixler. How you doing, Eric?
Hi, guys. I'm good. I'm here in Rhinecliff. I might have COVID. I might not. But, yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
You bet. So today's show, I thought gratitude is something that people say is good for you. It's good for other people. It helps you understand and appreciate the value of life, you know, from the small to the large, and to tweak your frame of mind. And this is sort of the gratitude season, right? We had Thanksgiving, right? Which is thanks and giving, right? It's not, you know, taking.
taking thanks.
And it's nice that we celebrate and we set aside time for these things. But I often wonder, well, like, why don't we take time away, you know, and set aside for, like meanness? You know, just specifically have, you know, like in Orwell's 1984, you have your minute of hate.
Right.
Right? So you just, like...
Mm-hmm. A day of ingratitude.
A day of ingratitude. Well, I was going to ask you, so what's the opposite of gratitude, Mr. Writer Literature Guy? Well,
that would be ingratitude, wouldn't it?
Is there another word for ingratitude?
No, I think I would say that I would vote for the word ingratitude.
You would vote for ingratitude.
An antonym for gratitude.
Right. And how about thankfulness?
An opposite of thankfulness. Ire.
Ire.
Well, how does kvetching relate?
Kvetching. Right. This is yes. I think we need to go out of English even to get a word to accurately nail this one. Thank you, Eric, our resident.
Oh, anytime.
Yiddish expert.
I'm here. I'm here as your native Yiddish speaker.
We got. We're, there's a full of tokens today.
Right.
Full of tokens. All right, so this is today's show is kvetch.
Mm-hmm. Kvetch giving.
It's kvetch. It's kvetch taking. Kvetch, you take it.
Yeah. Especially during the Trump administration, you know how often you heard the phrase airing of grievances on the news?
How often?
Actually, I think grievances is very closely related to the antonym of gratitude here.
Right.
Grieving. Grief.
Grievance. Not yeah. grieving, but grievance. Grievance.
Yeah. Which is different than grief.
Yeah, because, for Trump, every day was... grievance airing.
Yeah.
The holiday.
Grievance giving. Yeah.
The airing of grievances was a phrase that you heard on the news often in the same way you often heard during COVID the phrase another grim milestone. Should I use a different mic?
Yeah.
All right. How's this one?
Way better.
So are we going to air grievances?
We're going to start small with pet peeves. And I got a few songs. I got a few songs lined up for that. I put it out to some very knowledgeable people that I know. I'm for a list of grievances and pet peeves. But I'm going to start with mine, right? And these are
by no means
extensive. My number one pet peeve is of late is our rhetorical questions. Whose purpose is to shame you into behavioral changes, right? So my example.
Wait, isn't that basically half of parenting?
Yeah, but not. I'm the parent now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Well, what's an example?
An example is like when your dental hygienist asks you how often you floss.
Mm-hmm.
Like. Mm. She knows exactly how often, or he knows exactly how often you floss.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever had a male dental hygienist.
Well,
have you?
No, but there must be one or two out there.
I think I've had a male dental hygienist.
Yeah. All right, cool.
And they know that you don't floss. Oh, they know I don't floss.
Right.
You don't even cram floss. I always floss like the day before I go.
I cram floss, right? But it does no good. It's not like the AP Bio test.
I don't know. You should floss. And
yeah, no, I know. Thank you.
At least for me, like flossing just makes me feel better. Like it's like getting something stuck, unstuck from my teeth. It's like it's not even a dental hygiene thing. It's a my personal well-being thing.
I'm not floss right now.
Well, no. Anyway, just an example, right? So it's just an example. So, like, if they don't know that you don't floss, then they're a lousy dental hygienist, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they do know, right?
Right.
And they're forcing you to, Lord, then lie, mm-hmm. right? And,
right.
You know, and say, oh, like, every day. You know,
uh-huh.
And
I feel like I sometimes successfully trick my dental hygienist into thinking I regularly floss. Doesn't happen to you?
No.
Do I have a
no.
bad hygienist? Maybe I have a bad hygienist.
No, I mean that would be a very minor victory. but I'll take it. No, so
I'll
anyway,
take it too.
She's just asking you that question. So you feel guilty, and then you actually then start flossing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
the goal is noble, right?
Right.
But I don't like the methodology, right?
uh-huh.
Yeah, so...
I mean, I can understand that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's why you're here.
Yeah.
For your understanding.
Well, you know, I mean, it's similar to, like, there's some things I don't like that that people have said to me before, or that I've overheard. I was once... browsing in a bookstore, and I had a cup of coffee with me, and you know, like in a paper cup, and I had it on the shelf of the bookstore while I was perusing a book.
Violently perusing.
Yeah, no, it was just, like the cup of coffee was on the shelf, and then the lady that worked in the bookstore came up to me and pointed at the cup of coffee and said, "I'm going to have you move this."
Ooh.
It's like something about the construction of that.
Yeah.
I'm going to have you.
I'm going to have you move this. Mm. Or maybe she said, I'm going to have to ask you to move this.
I'm going to have
to ask you. She should just ask you. Yeah. It's that indirection. The indirection is super.
Well, I mean, she's just trying to separate herself from that task.
Right? Right.
Rather than just saying, could you move this, please?
Right.
Which is what people usually do.
She should say, I'm having an out-of-body experience, and my spirit that is going to leave my body shortly is going to ask you to move the cup.
Exactly. Or the passive voice, another major grammatical pet peeve. Like, you know, whenever there's a corporation that gets caught, you know, defrauding investors or polluting the environment or doing something that they shouldn't have been doing, they always release a press release that at some point includes the sentence, Mistakes were made. Yeah.
It's
understood.
We're not going to say who made the mistakes.
It's understood that mistakes were made.
But we're acknowledging that they were made.
Yeah, well, while we're on grammar as a ersatz English teacher, I told you I once got into trouble for, I got hauled into the not hauled in, I was kindly asked, by the principal to address this issue because I told a student, high school, mind you, 16 years old, and I have tried to correct him before, and he just didn't stick. And I said, every time you use an apostrophe S for plural, a puppy dies. And he got very upset, and I was told that was inappropriate, which I feel like there comes a certain point where you need to introduce trauma to make these grammar rules stick.
Right.
Yeah.
What happens when you don't use an apostrophe that should be there?
We never even got to that. You know, and that's fine.
Can I ask a question? I have two comments here. One, is it inappropriate because he actually thinks the puppy is dying? Is that the issue? I mean, I think that there's a whole question of what is literal and what is figurative, and how are the two distinguished? And I also wanted to say that, like, the misuse of apostrophes or the wrong number of twos in the word two, I would say those are very, like, present pet peeves for me, but I'm not sure if those are grievances. Are those also grievances?
Well, I think we're scaling up to grievances. We're starting small. We're moving up to pet. Starting with the pet peeves. Anyway. So moving on, another pet peeve of mine is the humble brag.
Mm-hmm.
Especially economic.
Like the word or the action?
Actually both. Now that I think about it, right? I mean, humble brag is kind of a cool word. It's fun to say, right?
Well, I think it's one of the most irritating words I can think of. But okay.
I mean, it's not my least favorite like internet neologism.
Is it
a neologism?
It's a new word.
Neologism. You know, a new word.
Okay. So some of our listeners may not have PhDs.
Nor do I.
There you go. But like I heard recently, somebody complained about how much taxes they had to pay. Right, and it turns out they actually paid more taxes than I like earned in a year gross. And I found that irritating.
Well, if may I defend this person for a moment? Maybe this isn't exactly a defense, but I think the issue is this connects very much back with what Janelle Bouie said. No, not Janelle Bouie. What Dave Chappelle said about why people in the Midwest like Donald Trump. He said they like Donald Trump because he was the first person to come out and say, I know the system is rigged, and I know the system is rigged because I take advantage of it. Yep. For example, I don't pay taxes. I think the issue here is that when you pay a lot of taxes, you actually feel like you messed up because if you had done it right, you wouldn't have had to pay those taxes no matter what. That's kind of the underlying psyche there. Not that it's not necessarily a humble brag, too, but I actually think it is a moment of acknowledgement of self-failure because you should have been in the class. You were like a nouveau riche. So while you had enough money to take advantage of the system, you didn't have the expertise to take advantage of the system.
So their self-valuation, or their just like the I'm smart because I make a lot of money, but I'm not so smart that I don't pay taxes. Is that correct?
If you're really smart, correct. You make a lot of money and you don't pay taxes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right. PhD and PhDs need not apply. Right.
Yeah.
But you don't have a PhD.
I do not have a PhD, and I know many PhDs that, as Henry Kissinger said, I'd rather be governed by the first 400 names in the Boston phone book than the Harvard faculty.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Henry Kissinger really said that?
I believe that is.
I think a lot is attributed to Kissinger. I'm pretty sure he said that. Yeah, the carpet bombing of Cambodia.
Right. Yeah, but he also said a lot of clever things.
Yeah, Well,
yeah.
He was witty.
Yeah. Go on. Can I just tell an anecdote about Henry Kissinger right now?
Oh, it's time for the Kissinger anecdote.
Okay, you can, but I want to be the conscience of our listeners again. Okay, nobody's a PhD, I get it, but I'll bet you a lot of people don't know who Henry Kissinger is, so maybe we can have one sentence about
Henry Kissinger was Nixon's Secretary of State, something that's kind of interesting about him is that he was one of the first Secretaries of State to come into the job not through politics, but he was an academic before that, because he taught at Harvard for a really long time. And this anecdote is about his long tenure at Harvard.
Wait, I apologize, but may I also say one other thing?
Mm-hmm.
It is of note because he was a German-born Jew. So right. I think both in being a non-born U.S. person in this role, and to a lesser extent being Jewish in this role, but also being the subject of Richard Nixon's anti-Semitism on a regular basis, those are also some interesting little bits of Henry Kissinger. Mm. But please, with your anecdote, I apologize.
Oh, I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff that could be said about Henry Kissinger. You know, we're not going to cover it all tonight, but I have many
grievances against Henry Kissinger, so maybe we should come back to him.
Right, a lot of people do, but this is an anecdote about Henry Kissinger that only I and a small number of other people can tell, which is that I knew someone whose mother, whose mother went to Harvard in the early 60s when Henry Kissinger was teaching there, and she had this fantastic story about she didn't study for a test, and she was about to bomb this test in Henry Kissinger's class, and she went to Henry Kissinger in his office and said, I'm terribly sorry, but my mother is ill. She's really sick. We're afraid that she's dying. I have to fly home and visit my family right now. Can I please take the test next week? And Henry Kissinger said, sure. Like, he could tell that it was, we're on the radio, BS.
Right.
And he said, sure, if you're in, you know, such dire straits, I can help you out. I'll drive you to the airport. And she said, right now? And he said, yes, it's urgent. Go right now. She lived in Buffalo. And she said, okay. And so Henry Kissinger, this could only happen in the 60s. Henry Kissinger walked back with her to her dorm room. She packed a suitcase. And then he drove her to the airport and watched her buy a ticket and get on a plane to Buffalo. and he knew that it was a lie the entire time. He was just kind of like, if she actually does all this and buys this unnecessary ticket to Buffalo and then shows up at her family's home, then she deserves the extension.
Uh-huh. Well, that's all right. I mean, that almost makes up for carpet bombing Cambodia, right? All right. So moving on, we still got. That's a great anecdote.
Yeah,
yeah. Here's one that may be the when you're a supermarket checkout line, right? This time of year happens. It happens pretty regularly now, and you're buying a lot of unnecessary things, they ask you if you'd like to round up or donate money to the Bag of Hope.
Is there a charity called that?
No, it's what it's the thing okay. that this supermarket that I frequent. They have they change it. It's like you know the box of joy. It's a, this year it's the bag of hope, and I want to sort of ask them like how do you feel like basically panhandling you know like for other people, and you're going to give money to this large corporation, and then they're going to get credit for, you know, stuffing a bag of hope and giving it to the hopeless? I mean, right? I mean, is a bag going to be enough for somebody with no hope?
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, I just don't like, I feel like, just give money, you know? We pay taxes, you know, like that schmuck who humble bragged about, you know, paying. We have enough to take care of everybody, right? But the charitable industry, and I mean I feel like this radio station is necessarily funded by people giving charitable donations, but I think it should be funded by the government, and I think we should be able to say curse words and stuff, but
if it were funded by the government, we wouldn't be able to say curse words.
Well, we can't now.
Well, I mean, surely it doesn't cost all that much to operate this radio station.
No, but I mean, people need to be, you know, paid, and equipment needs to be, you know, like, I mean, I don't need to be paid. I mean, I actually pay for this privilege. So,
you know, I mean, of all the things that the government should fund, I'm not like Jesse Helms in the 90s, like railing against the NEA, but, you know, I mean, I'm not against funding this radio station, but I mean, I think it's...
You can go on the record for that. It's down the... Well, I mean, it's... I don't know. It's a bag of hope. It's just bag of hope.
It's not high on the list of priorities.
No, I'm going to sound like a terrible, horrible person because I'm like... And I always say no. You know, they make you feel bad, like that. Like I'm not gonna give like a nickel if it's like 95. You want to round up for the bag of hope? I'm like, no, I'm not even gonna give a nickel to the bag.
No, when you're in the store and they ask you to round up, like I don't believe that money ever gets to a charity. I don't know where it goes, but I have zero faith in that whole system. But I think getting back to the grievance, I think I'm opposed to all philanthropy. I think the government should be funding anybody who wants to play in a band or have a radio show or whatever. Why not? Philanthropy is so wrong because it underlies the system where we're saying rich people get to make all the decisions. We funnel the resources to wealthy people, then they get to decide what's prioritized.
Exactly. Like cancer research and stuff like that. Right. Uh-huh.
I mean, there are certain things like, something that I happen to know functions mostly through the philanthropic dollar is the New York City Ballet. You know, should we? I'm not sure what I'm trying to say here exactly, but there are some things that I think are more things. Okay, some things are important enough that absolutely the government should fund it, like healthcare.
Sure.
You know? Okay. And then there are other things that are kind of like. Not necessities, but it's kind of culturally nice to have them.
Yeah,
you know.
I know that's true.
Are you saying the government should not fund the New York City Ballet? And I think there's also a question of proportion here. You could fund all of these cultural associations, organizations, whatever you want to call them, with a minuscule fraction of the amount of money you would need to fund, let's say, healthcare or the army.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'm glad you guys are all on board with my. Anti-bag of hope screed.
What is bag of hope? I don't even know what bag of hope means.
I didn't. You know, if I was in a better mood, I would have stayed around. I would have asked. You know.
Yeah.
But then he had the temerity to go. Are you sure? After I said no.
Are you sure that you don't want to donate to the bag of hope?
I didn't even answer. I just scowled at him.
do you think bag of hope is maybe just bag of weed? Is that a charity now?
If I knew that it was going for drugs for people,
you would have done it.
I probably would have donated.
Right. Yeah. You know, yeah. Right, because I would absolutely donate to the fund for, you know, that gives these, you know, 3 cents to rounding up my order at the grocery store to, you know, supplying drug addicts with more drugs.
Oh, look, that sounds amazing. I mean, the store would still steal the money, and the drug addicts would never get the drugs.
Right.
But other than that, I love it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I'm going to play a song now.
A song about grievances?
This is one of my favorite songs about grievances, all right? And then we'll come back and we'll complain some more.
Yeah, we'll grieve.
Yeah, this is your day of kvetching. WGXE, this is Kevin Factor with Benjamin Hale and Eric Fixler remotely in an undisclosed location. And this is Foraging Ahead.
Dear Abby, my feet are too long. My hair's falling out and my rights are all wrong. My friends, they all tell me that I've no friends at all. Won't you write me a letter? Won't you give me a call? Signed, B. Willard. B. Willard, B. Willard, you have no complaint. You are what you are and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knocking on wood. Dear Abby, my fountain pen leaks. My wife hollers at me and my kids are all freaks. Every side I get up on is the wrong side of the bed. If it weren't so expensive, I'd wish I were dead. Signed, unhappy. Unhappy, unhappy, you have no complaint. You are what you are and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knocking on wood. Dear Abby, you won't believe this, but my stomach makes noises whenever I kiss. My girlfriend tells me it's all in my head, but my stomach tells me to write you instead. Sign, noisemaker.
Noisemaker, noisemaker, you have no complaint. You are what you are and you ain't what you ain't. So listen up, Buster, and listen up good. Stop wishing for bad luck and knocking on wood.
All right, that was a little
taste. Dear Abby by Rick Van Emmenthaler. I have one complaint to add to the list that just grows. The little buttons on the control board. So the first couple of 30 seconds of that song was not broadcast because I accidentally hit the wrong button.
Oh, was it just silence?
No, it was. Well, they got silence. We heard it,
but it was 30 seconds of mysterious dead time for the listener.
Yeah, or was it the listeners say relief?
Anyway,
that yeah. All right, so I got a few more. I got a good list of stuff. Some grievances that people wrote in with is whenever something wants to describe something as being really large or really small, they compare it to a state, right? Hmm. So
why does that?
I don't know anyone who does that. Well, who ever does that?
Oh, I had a cheeseburger the other day that was the size of Rhode Island.
Hmm.
Right.
Well, do people say Rhode Island? Because people usually the states that people use metaphorically are the size of Texas or the size of Texas is always the
Texas or Rhode Island
big state.
No one ever says it's either the smallest or the biggest of the contiguous states. Right?
Uh huh. Yeah. I had a cheeseburger the size of Minnesota.
I think,
not the
I
same
think
shape,
this is
though.
A photo on Niagara. I think people haven't been saying this for like 100 years.
I think they've been saying it for 300 years.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I
think people have been saying it longer than California.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, something that people in Caitlin's dress shop often say is we talk about this a lot because it's a funny expression. They say, "Does this make me look like a house?" Meaning, does this make me look fat? Does this make me look big? You
right.
know? And so,
yes, you have windows on you.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a strange metaphor in the of like reaching for something big, you know, and so we have kind of this running in joke where we say, does this dress make me look like an aircraft carrier?
Now that would be good.
Yeah.
And I think
does this dress make me look like the Hubble Space Telescope?
Yeah. I think that's a good game now.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And that's it. You just need to keep people on their toes, you know, like mm-hmm. I spent much of my day you know, in my head. Mm-hmm. And coming up with like weird answers to questions I know I'm going to get.
Okay, like what?
You know, like people say, "Hey, what's up?" And I have like any number of answers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean like that
people say, "Hey,
what school thing?" The sky, you know.
Yeah, but not the sky. I usually say my tolerance.
Okay,
right. My dander.
Uh-huh.
You know,
my blood pressure.
You know, medical things.
Right.
Yeah, which is. I know. I find amusing, and that's enough. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's the states, like people comparing things to states.
Mm-hmm. Like, why does that bother you?
It doesn't bother me. It bothers Tom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, these are not my grievances. What's that, Eric?
Tom who?
Tom Gogola.
Oh, okay. All right. I was just wondering. All right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But he, yeah.
Yeah.
He says hello, by the way.
Hello.
Antonin Scalia, every letter in his name.
What? Because you don't like thinking about Antonin Scalia, or there's something about the letters that irritates you?
Not me, again.
Oh, okay.
This is, I can't name this person,
because
uh-huh. He wrote this when he was mm-hmm. under the influence.
Uh-huh.
But he just hates.
Even when after he got a bag of hope,
he just hates. No, I personally got a bag of hope issue. Mm-hmm. But he just hates Antonin Scalia so uh-huh. much that every uh-huh. letter in his name.
There's something that I was thinking about, especially you know, after Scalia died and then Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, mm. which is that Ginsburg and Scalia were good personal friends.
Yeah.
And they were both opera buffs, and they loved to go to the opera together. And I think shortly after Scalia died, a bunch of people were sharing an image of the time that Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Antonin Scalia took a vacation to India together, and they were riding an elephant. There's a picture of them riding an elephant together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just kind of like, I like thinking about how the two of them could, you know, just put their political differences aside and be friends. It's mm-hmm. kind of, indicative of an era that seems sadly lost.
Yeah.
I have a problem with that. I have a grievance against them. I don't think they should be friends. Why would they have?
Because they both loved opera, and they were both, you know, legal minds. Like, they were both...
Also, if they were riding an elephant together, does that mean they were hooking up?
I think it means they were riding an elephant together. Hmm. That's not a euphemism for anything, I don't think. There is a picture of them riding an elephant together. You know, right. they ride the elephant together.
He's riding that elephant with Scalia, you know?
Oh, my God.
We've got the soft bigotry of low tire pressure. insufficiently difficult Scooby-Doo villain reveals.
That doesn't bother me. I actually kind of like that.
Yeah, I like this. I like the simple ones. Mm-hmm. Helvetica bold.
Why bold?
I mean,
this is someone else's.
My grievances are done. Like mm-hmm. I'm just going on to other people's grievances.
Okay. Well, I definitely don't share that one.
I'm airing.
Yeah. I have nothing against Helvetica bold.
No. Do you have any? Is there any particular font that you don't care for?
Well, yeah, there are a lot of fonts I don't care for.
Well, give me your top one.
Well, okay. Fonts are interesting. Times New Roman is I don't like it. It's basic, you know.
Well, yeah.
It means you didn't you know, care enough about the aesthetics of the letters to change it from what Microsoft Word like gave you as a default.
But isn't that? But that's the default on all papers, isn't it? At Times New Roman 12-point font, double space.
If it's a requirement of the professor, that's fine.
You don't require that.
I don't require it. No, I say use any font you want as long as it's a serif font.
A serif.
Why a serif font? Actually, I was just going to say. I think actually on screens, serif fonts are generally inferior to non-serif fonts in readability.
In readability on screens, but not on paper, at least for me.
You really think serif fonts are more readable on paper?
I do, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think they also look more serious. I mean, I love fonts. I mean, my favorite font for years has been Calson Pro.
Oh, pause. So you're telling me that because something has little flourishes at the end, that, like, convinces you that there's something more intelligent about it.
Well, the Errol Morris did a really interesting experiment about this, where this experiment sounds illegal. I'm not quite sure how he was able to do it, but he took the same paper that was about a pretty banal subject that could be written in many different college level history classes. I think it was a history paper, and he farmed out this exact same paper to students at many different institutions of higher learning. You know, Ivy League colleges, state schools, 2-year community colleges, across the board. And he gave them all the same paper, but told them to submit it in different fonts. And the result of the experiment is that generally, papers are graded higher if they're submitted in a serif font that is not Times New Roman.
What?
Well, okay. So I think the grievance here should be against serif fonts because they should be eliminated. The government should not fund them.
the government should not fund the serifs. Like we need to
the
knock
government
those
should
little,
stop funding
those little
serif
doohickeys
fonts,
off the letters. But and the thing is that it might be a completely irrational subconscious thing. But at least for me, if a student turns something in a serif font that isn't Times New Roman, then it means that that person deliberately changed the font at some point, which means that they cared a little bit about the aesthetics of how the letters look on the page. And it's not so crazy to think that that person who evinces more care would be a better writer than someone who just uses the default font.
Wow.
Okay.
That's my theory.
Yeah, I believe that.
You can have your theory and attitude, but I think ultimately my grievance here is against. I think I have a separate grievance.
Well, because you read things on a computer. I mean, and Ben here reads paper.
I mean, I try to.
Well, okay. So Ben, I disagree that the fonts that there's any readability distinction on paper. So I would say my actual grievance is against needless ornamentation, and I think serif
really?
Fonts are needless ornamentation.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know.
Well, we're talking about letters here.
And we're talking about a man who goes to New York City to get his hair cut.
but what I'm saying is I think we can use inductive reasoning to pull back here from serif fonts. And just, so you guys are for needless ornamentation? You guys are into that?
With letters, yes. With architecture, no. You know, with architecture, I agree with Frank Lloyd Wright that form must follow function. But with letters, I think it looks better with serifs.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a personal taste, right? boy, I'm glad you guys aren't in the same room. This is you'd be coming to blows.
This is very disappointing to me, but okay, please continue.
You disappointed Fixler.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. It makes me happy. I do it daily.
It looks more serious. It looks. Yeah. It just looks better. You know, there's a reason why you pick. You don't pick up any magazine like, you know, Harper's, The New Yorker. They don't have their articles in a sans serif font. Right?
That's because they're pretentious.
Any newspaper, you know, any book that you pick
up? So pretentious. Right.
Oh, yeah. All right. So, all right. Well, we're gonna take another little musical break. shit. I gotta recover. You guys need to calm yourselves down. The great font confrontation. But here's an interesting little cover of a Nirvana tune. I hope you enjoy it.
One, two, three. She has me like a Pisces when I am weak.
That was Dead Sarah with a really haunting cover of Nirvana.
I think I just Heart-Shaped Box. I just comprehended some of the lyrics of that song for the first time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it goes, "Forever in debt to your priceless advice." Right? Before, I thought it was just like.
He was a good writer, though.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
The lyrics were good.
No, absolutely.
You know, but and then
I just couldn't understand a lot.
And then he would complain that people misunderstood his songs. They didn't misunderstand them; they just couldn't like get the lyrics.
Well, you know? Yeah, he needs to enunciate.
Yeah, I think that was the big problem with Nirvana.
Right.
I think ultimately what drove him to is
his untimely demise.
I'm sorry, no, that's terrible. Terrible thing to say.
No, that's pretty bad. That was pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was tragic. I remember when that happened.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is the complaining show.
Mm-hmm.
You probably already have a bunch just from listening to me. Mm-hmm. And my guests tonight are co-pilots, Benjamin Hale and... at a subterranean bunker in
an undisclosed location,
Eric Fixler.
Hi.
So I got another list. Have you thought of any? I got.
Well, you know, there's. We're talking about like linguistic complaints earlier, and so I wrote a couple down just to if you ask me that question, which is things that people have said before that have irritated me. I remember once I was a teenager working in a bagel shop a long time ago, and I had a boss who I thought was really irritating in Boulder, Colorado, my hometown, and the manager, the guy who managed the bagel shop, I heard him say this all the time, but he would say things like, "I'm all out of cinnamon raisin bagels. I'm all out of cinnamon raisin bagels,"
right.
Instead of as if his eye spoke for the entire store.
Right.
And anyone else who worked there would have said, "We're all out of cinnamon raisin bagels."
He's all out of cinnamon raisin bagels.
Let me get this straight, Ben.
Uh-huh.
So you're telling me that you have an issue with your bagel boss's narcissism,
mm-hmm.
but not with the crappy bagels in Boulder, Colorado.
He
didn't know.
Well, I mean, you're not going to get, you know, I mean, it was, first of all, not all the bagels in Boulder, Colorado are crappy. The ones that I was selling were, but, but yeah, that's, it was the I when you should say we.
Yeah. And any place that runs out of cinnamon raisin bagels, has got a customer base that just should not be eating bagels.
That was just an example of a bagel.
Oh.
I don't know. I don't have a pet peeve on. I'm not as opposed to cinnamon raisin bagels as that.
You're dead to me. All right. Any other linguistic pet peeves?
Well, I don't like it when people use the word less when they should say fewer.
Well, I think there are less people that do that now.
Sorry. Yeah, and it's like eventually less and fewer are just going to get blurred together, and you know, it'll just be like when you
sewer,
sewer and sower.
No, sewer, less and so and fewer.
Oh right, yeah, or fess.
Fess, yeah, yeah.
Well, but just if anyone at home is wondering, less is when you have less of a substance, and fewer is when you have fewer. Countable,
count and uncount nouns. People basically need to
exactly. Yeah, countable increments.
Yeah.
Of
so,
something.
Yeah. So if you have ever taught English as a second language or English as a new language,
mm-hmm.
You will know this. If you have not, you won't.
You probably won't.
You probably won't. But yeah, and I'm with you on that. You know.
Uh huh.
I try to do.
So if my bag of hope is light, is it less bag of hope or fewer bag of hope?
Well, there's less hope in your bag.
There's less hope in your bag, yeah. If I had three bags of hope, then, and, you know, and I'm and I give you one, I'm less one bag of hope.
Okay.
You have one fewer.
I have a fewer. One
you have
fewer,
one fewer bag of hope.
But I'm also less one.
I guess. Well, I'm not sure about that one.
All right, you're going to think about that. Okay, Massachusetts drivers. This is just a random.
Oh, yeah, and Connecticut drivers are even worse.
Really?
Yeah, in my opinion.
And what's their characteristic?
I don't know. It's just I think they're not used to the higher speed limits in or they're just used to being confused if they're from Boston. You know, they're surprised that streets continue to be named the same thing for more than 20 feet.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what it is, but in that area of New England, like Connecticut, Rhode Island, Boston, mm-hmm. Terrible drivers.
Yeah.
Just anecdotally, in my experience.
No. Yeah. No, there should be less drivers from those states.
There should be less driving.
There should be less drivers and, you know, mm-hmm. especially if they're as large as Rhode Island. wellness-based marketing. Gluten-free, wafer, virtually anything labeled organic.
I can see that.
I feel like this is, like, organic is sort of like the new kosher.
Mm-hmm. Well, how so?
Fixer, you could jump in any time on this one.
I'm all ears on this.
Well, I feel like organic because it's like people used to get, this is maybe before your time, Ben, but out of New York anyway, if you're having a meal on a flight, you could get the kosher meal,
uh-huh.
right? You could order a special kosher meal.
Yeah.
And it was no better than the other dreck.
No, it was worse. It was 100% worse.
It was, well, not 100% worse. Maybe like 98% worse, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was less good.
Right.
Than, I mean, you'd get... Yeah, because it was like, ooh, something special, mm-hmm. little dip. Oh, and you know, how come mm-hmm. they can get that and I can't get it, right? And it's just,
uh-huh.
it's the same, it's horrible, right? And
so to me,
non-kosher people would order the kosher meal because they thought they were getting something extra, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, basically that kosher just is like a signifier that, mm-hmm. You know, you're good with God, right?
Uh-huh.
That you're keeping His laws, right?
When you think of kosher, you're just thinking about the consumer end of kosher. I think this is the difference. When I think about kosher, I think about the producing end of kosher. So what kosher means to me is that you paid some guy with a big gray beard, some gray hair, and a white shirt and black pants. You paid him probably $500 a week to not come and check on your facility, and that to me is like the ultimate image of kosher. But much like organic, where actually a lot of that industry is about paying for certification,
right.
which is why a lot of people don't do it.
Right. Wait. So hang on. Back up a second. So I think you slipped in a subtlety there that I think most people will miss. I mean, the rabbi was supposed to inspect it.
Mm-hmm.
Correct? Yeah.
Correct.
So you're just making the assumption that the rabbi is just on a take and is not going and doing the inspections.
I think that in certain circles, the idea that the kashrut inspector is probably not doing that much inspecting mm-hmm. and is mm-hmm. doing a lot of taking is a pretty like accepted stereotype. Maybe a stereotype, but many stereotypes have a little bit of truth in them, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's one of my stereotyping people is one of my pet peeves.
Well deserved.
Yeah. but I think it's similar with organic food in that respect.
Assuming that on the
production side that everything is supposed to be going the way it's supposed to be going with kosher,
mm-hmm.
that means that you are eating something that is pleasing to God, right?
Uh-huh.
And
I don't believe that the crappy fake Oreos that I ate growing up were pleasing to God. And that's my ultimate issue here.
Mm-hmm.
Why would it please God that I ate crappy Oreos?
It's not that it pleases ridiculous. God, it's that it doesn't displease him, right?
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, it's who are you? Were you there when he made the seas and the stars and the heavens? No, Fixler, you were not. You know, I mean, how do you know that he may have been absolutely over the moon that you were eating those crappy Oreo, fake Oreos,
uh-huh.
or those little jelly rings. You
uh-huh.
know,
I don't think it was.
I love the jelly rings to this day.
Well, I mean, with kosher, like I've never seen kosher meals on an airplane. Maybe it was. I mean,
what?
You know,
have been looking. You wish we're not looking.
Maybe I wasn't looking, or maybe I wasn't asking. I don't know. But you know, I mean, I know a guy who's. I know a guy who knows a guy. I actually do know this guy. You know, he's a. I think he's Orthodox. I'm not sure exactly what.
You would know if he was Orthodox.
Well,
but
yeah.
Go on.
I mean, no, I don't know, because there are different distinctions, and I'm not quite sure, but he's some sort of Orthodox, you know, and I remember...
Some sort of, okay.
Yeah, there are many different distinctions inside of Orthodox that I don't quite understand, but so I don't want to, you know, speak... out of the side of my
this
mouth.
This synagogue I wouldn't set foot in.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No. But I was at this party after a dinner party after somebody gave a reading at Bard, and the person who hosted the party, like the guy who was reading, was an Israeli poet, and like there were a lot of Jews at this party, and the person hosting it, who was not Jewish, had gone out of his way to like make everything kosher, right?
Right.
And then you know the Orthodox guy that I know who was at the party, you know, the host of the party was like, I made everything kosher. And then the Orthodox guy was like, no, you didn't. It might be fine for these guys, but like, I am of another level of kosher where I can't.
Glot kosher.
What is glot kosher?
Well, no, I will bet you that, okay, so glot kosher actually is interesting because it's kind of a higher level of supervision, but one of the things about glot kosher is that the food and its ingredients can't be made on the Sabbath. But I actually think what this guy was telling you, getting back to our prior thing, is a lot of times when people say they're doing kosher, they'll like do kosher ingredients. He's saying he wants the inspected stuff. He wants the stuff that the guy didn't make sure was actually kosher in the factory.
Right. It was kosher enough for the less religious Jews at this party, but for him, he was like, I need to know for sure, like whether or not it's actually kosher. And if I don't know, I'm not going to just trust you. And he was like, "No offense, but I just can't. I can't eat this." Right. And I expect that guy would probably not eat the kosher meal on the plane,
or be invited back to any party.
He wasn't mean about it. He was just, you know.
What do you mean? That's
he did it as politely as possible.
That is so completely obnoxious. That is so completely obnoxious. Like, I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, somebody goes out of the way to make something for you, right?
Well, for a bunch of people.
For a bunch of people, right? And then, you know, and it's...
Well, okay.
Is being inhospitable, like... less important than sort of...
I had a very similar experience growing up where at an early birthday party, it would have been first or second grade, my parents got like regular Italian pizza at the party, and the rabbi principal of my school was there. No, it didn't have meat on it or anything like that.
But it was cheese.
But it was I'm not kosher. Mm-hmm. And,
basting a calf in its mother's milk.
Yes, this created a problem where, like, you know, the rabbi's son who was at my birthday party refused to eat it, and it became a thing. But, so I don't know.
I mean, if you look at it from his perspective, it's not that he refused to eat it, it's that he couldn't eat it because of his religion.
So maybe we can't complain about this guy at the party because he thought he was displeasing God. He would displease God by eating this food.
Ugh. There's Miss Shugana. That's it. Yeah. All right. Well, God, how we get... Oh, we got that organic wellness-based marketing, right? Wellness-based marketing's been around for a while, right?
Mm-hmm.
See, what I got people who self-diagnose themselves with OCD because they're neat. Okay, I've never had that problem.
And if someone were to do that, it wouldn't bother me.
Yeah, no, it bothers this person. excusing someone's abusive behavior because they have a medical condition, psychiatric diagnosis... or have experienced some kind of trauma.
Doesn't bother me either.
No?
Yeah.
No. I mean, yeah. I guess
it depends on how abusive and to who.
I suppose that's true. Narcissists, but I think we covered narcissists.
Mm-hmm.
Personal brand building.
Irritating, sure. Yeah. But, you know.
Thought leaders?
What's a thought leader?
I don't know. Fixler?
Yeah, I can't even. I'll share a grievance on this one.
You can't share a grievance on this one?
No, I will. I share this grievance. I
oh, you share this. Okay, so
this is certainly one of the most abused terms around.
But I'm just not. What does it mean?
It means someone who you look to for intellectual guidance, right? It means someone who's saying things that are strategic.
I don't know. Well. Yeah, I just don't like it. Blue ribbon panels. That's a good one.
What's a blue
ribbon panel?
For a 4-H contest?
I don't know.
Fair?
A blue ribbon panel has said
a panel of thought leaders.
Yeah, a panel of thought leaders judging the best pig. I guess they wouldn't be kosher blue ribbon thought leaders.
No. Time.
Someone is aggrieved by time?
Well, the way time has messes with you.
Well, I have no solution to that one.
No, but I'm totally with this. I mean,
yeah.
it's a complaint.
It would be nice if we could, if we didn't have to die and things like that.
Well, I'm not worried about dying.
Is that the complaint?
I just hate going to bed and then, like, waking up and, like, all of a sudden my shoulder hurts because I slept wrong. Like, that's so...
Uh-huh.
I mean, come on.
I mean, you know, you might be able to fix that one by, I don't know, getting a more comfortable mattress or something like that.
No, it's impossible.
Like, if it really bothers you that much, there are solutions.
I don't think so. I think it's just... Oh, man. Well, look, hey, boy, you know
what I hate more than time? Space.
Space?
Yeah, just get rid of it.
Get rid of space?
Yeah. No, my point is that there's no point in being aggrieved by time or space. Or, you know.
Well, there's no point in being aggrieved by anything.
There's more of a point about being aggrieved by some things than other things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And time is, in my opinion, very low.
And serif fonts.
Yeah. Serif fonts, like fonts, yes, I can understand grievances about that, but getting mad at time is, could you imagine a more pointless anger?
Yeah, but it's durable.